This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed to discuss the NBA trade deadline approaching next month, Wemby versus Giannis round one, the Spurs' close loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Trey Jones at the starting point guard position. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, how you doing?
I am doing great. It's a busy time of year, but it's an exciting time of year. The YouTube viewers might have just seen my dog jump in my lap. He's also excited to discuss the Spurs. So, yeah, it's been an exciting time. You know, I looked up and all of a sudden we're a month away from the trade deadline, which is exciting. I really have no idea. You know, so many years the Spurs did nothing. In the past couple of years, they've actually been active on the trade deadline, and I have no idea what to expect for this year, if they're going to be active or not. So it's an exciting time of year to start getting the gears turning for that stuff.
Let's go ahead and jump right into this. So this is going to be a little bit different, Spurs Cast listeners. Colin got me really excited here on this first topic, because basically what we did is I prepped my notes. It was really just to talk about the most recent games, which were exciting games with the loss against the Bucks and then the loss to the Cavs. However, with the trade deadline coming up, Colin, I actually just, you know, said, hey, if you have anything else in mind you want to talk about, you know, go ahead and put up some notes. And so he actually did do that. So we're actually going to begin with his topic first, which is the trade deadline approaching on February 8th, which we are recording, I want to say, on January 9th. So it's about a month away from now. Exactly. So Colin, I'm going to let you take the helm here. However, I do want to talk about one quick rumor that just got reported today. So according to Shams Charania, who writes for The Athletic, he also has a show on FanDuel TV. He said on what is today? Today's Tuesday. Yes. Okay. He said on Tuesday morning on that show that the Spurs are one of the teams with exploratory interest in former Spur DeJounte Murray. That of course the Lakers and a few other teams are out there. I think the Knicks have been linked to DeJounte to having interest. So there's been a few teams with interest in Murray. However, today, according to Shams, which we know Shams is a very reputable reporter, he did report that the Spurs are one of the teams that has some exploratory interest. Again, he's not saying that they're going to be super aggressive about going after DeJounte or any other players out in the trade at the trade time, or they may even still wait to like the offseason to make a move. But again, this is just some new information that I just learned today right before we recorded. And so as we go through your topics, Colin, your notes, we will kind of talk about Murray here. So go ahead and begin.
Yeah, so first with the Murray rumors, you know, I think everyone likes the idea of transaction and trades until there's an actual name listed. I think people really like the idea of the mystery box, you know, like, oh, we could get a player. You know, that's what a lot of the fans think. And then it's like, oh, well, the Spurs are linked to DeJounte Murray. That'd be a pretty big splash. And people are like, no, not that one. I want someone else, which is interesting. I know that there are a lot of Spurs fans who still want DeJounte based on the time here. One of the things that I think is interesting is, you know, I don't think him alone raises this to a contender or anything, but the last time he was on the team, the offense was really centered around his pick and roll with Jakob Poeltl. And that base of an offense was good enough to get them into the play-in. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a pick and roll ball handler. And I think one of the things that if the Spurs were to bring him on, what that would provide is 48 minutes of a solid pick and roll ball handler with him and Trey together. You know, obviously not playing together, but like throughout the game, now you have 48 minutes of a good pick and roll ball handler. I think the other thing the Spurs have been needing is a perimeter defender, a player who can get over screens, a player who can cut off the drive, a player who can get to the line. You know, like, he has these skills. Of course, he has his warts, and part of that is the reason why he's available after signing this huge extension and the Hawks are 14-21. You know, like, there's a reason why he's available now, but his shooting has improved since he was with the team. So I think, you know, exploratory talks. I did this exercise with my brother where we talked about, like, what would these talks be like? And he kind of played the Spurs and I played the Hawks. And I was saying, hey, as the Hawks, I want our 2025 first back. And he was like, well, I don't want to give you that. And then the talks just ended. And I could see that being how it goes in real life, because if you're giving up DeJounte Murray, then you're going in a new direction and you probably want your own draft pick back. If I were the Spurs, I wouldn't want to give that back if I was getting DeJounte Murray, because they're getting so much worse in that situation. So it's hard. I do think that, you know, he's not the perfect fit for this team, but I do think that a lot of the holes that the Spurs have, he has skills that could help fill those holes. And I do think that over time he could be a good pick and roll partner with Vic. I was surprised when I saw that, though. You know, I came on to Twitter earlier today, and I just kind of threw out there, because point guard play has been such a big discussion. Mm-hmm. I just said, hey, you know, what is a guard that, you know, any of y'all might want the Spurs to go after that'd be reasonably available? And the first response was DeJounte, and I didn't know this report had come out. And I was like, oh, this person just likes DeJounte. And all of a sudden, no, you know, there's this report. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I think that, you know, it probably was just them calling the Hawks and saying, hey, what's the initial price? And maybe not too much further, but it was interesting. What did you think about the rumor?
Okay, so mine's not as much focus on the picks that would be involved, because I just feel like the Spurs have the picks to get a deal done. I mean, for me, it's more so what do the Hawks want in terms of, are they trying to keep a competitive team out there for Trae Young? Because, you know, he's obviously not going to be happy if they're going to, you know, get worse. Or are they looking to start going in the future direction and maybe telling San Antonio, hey, take on some of our bad contracts, or we'll take on some of your bad contracts for better draft capital. And so that brings in two questions. Like if they just want the picks mainly, that's the focus of this trade. So they're willing to take some contracts. So you could be, and the good thing about this deal, if it were to happen, is that Murray's salary is not too high. It's only $18 million. So if you're the Spurs, you can easily make a deal with that salary. And then his extension does kick in this summer at $25 million. But again, even that's not too much. Like when you look at the percentage of the cap, it's not as much. So anyway, just focusing on that $18 million. So you can build a package quickly with some picks, like around like Doug McDermott and I had a player of mine, maybe like Devontae Graham and so, right? There's two players, Devontae Graham and Doug McDermott, Jetty Osmond, that kind of thing. And then the picks are there. So that's one route they could go, or maybe the Hawks want to send them back some salary that they don't want on their books. The other route, though, where I think San Antonio kind of, and I want to ask you this, is what if they want to keep a competitive team out there right now in Atlanta, and they want, which obviously the player that's going to come to mind is Keldon Johnson. He's a wing there, still on a really good contract. He signed an extension himself, and so his salary is at $20 million. So it almost lines up perfectly. And maybe you don't have to give up as much draft capital if you're San Antonio in that case. You win that battle, but again, you're probably having to lose Keldon. So what do you think about that? If it came down to the Hawks wanting Keldon and the Spurs wanting DeJounte?
I think, you know, the Spurs have kind of this log jam at wing of that size, you know, with Malachi and Jetty and Keldon and Devin Vassell and Sohan, who, you know, I, you know, watching the Bucks game, of course, Giannis is otherworldly talent, but I think just from my eyes, Sohan is really well equipped to guard 1 through 3 right now, and sometimes bigger fours can still power through him pretty good. So you have all these guys that can guard like the 1 through 3 position. And then you have Vic, who's like a generational rim protector already. And I think you don't have a lot of the in-between right now. And so I think you do have a little bit of a logjam of those players who are like wing, smaller wing, big guard size defenders. And so I think, to me, obviously, when you bring in DeJounte, you're getting something similar on defense. I think that he's still filling some holes, but I think it's difficult because I think there's kind of a trade-off in that trade, you know, like you're giving up, you know, a good energy guy, a good locker room guy, and all of those things. You know, I think that the Spurs have to come to a decision on whether or not they want to continue with this core of young wings right now, split it up at the trade deadline, or split it up in the offseason. I believe that Zach Lowe and Andrew Schlatt were talking about players that OKC could target, and one name they had mentioned was Keldon Johnson, you know, and I think that we've already heard the reporting. Teams that aren't San Antonio feel like he might be the most gettable of those players, just based on, you know, we've heard that kind of reporting, and that doesn't come from inside the team. Like, none of this stuff shows how the Spurs themselves are thinking, but there has been enough smoke that I wouldn't be surprised if they made a move like that. I think, so you talked about two potential deal constructions, and that's take on bad money, send out a good player, but there's also one other one, which is send out young unproven players who might make them take a step back right now, but could improve their long-term vision, which the Spurs, you know, actually have a decent amount of young players on the roster. If you were the Spurs and the Hawks said Blake Wesley, Malachi Branham, and the Chicago pick for DeJounte straight up, what would you say?
Yeah, I think I got to look at the Chicago pick again, where it's expected to land. It's not next year, right? It's 20.
It's next year.
It's next year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the Not 24, 25 you're talking about, right?
25, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, and isn't that supposed to be like a little bit of a better draft? I don't...
Yeah, oh yeah, it's better than this one for sure.
Definitely better. Yeah, so that's why like this coming draft, I'm not afraid to, you know, trade any of these picks. It's the following year. Man, just because, you know, again, Wesley's pretty much not part of this rotation at the moment. Branham, you know, we don't know exactly where his trajectory is going to go. So I think maybe if you're San Antonio, you might look at doing something like that. If you're able to hold on Kelton. But the reason why I think they're more willing to move Kelton is just because it almost seems like they haven't found a spot where he fits with this group. You know, just the fact that he got moved to the bench, which is he's been very productive. It gives him more opportunity. But also Pop was basically saying, you know, we want Vassell and Wemby to basically be able to do more, be more creative out there. So obviously it showed that Kelton's usage was a little bit higher with them. So I don't know, man, I'd really think about that if I was the Spurs, but that potentially, but again, it's just an interesting trade. The more that I just kind of write it down on paper, just looking at a team for next year, again, if you were just to put Kelton and swap Murray is, you know, you'd have Murray, Vassell, probably still need a starting three. Whether you want to go through draft, you might have the number one pick again. You could, or actually, no, if they get Murray, they would obviously probably be better in terms of, they'd probably still be a bottom 10 team, but maybe not in that bottom three anymore. You know, so if you want to continue with Sochan at the four, and then you got Wemby at the five, and then off the bench, you have still a foundation there with Jones, Branham, and then Zach Collins. And then of course you have some depth there. Again, you're probably going to get the Raptors pick. So there's a lot of different avenues and there's still some flexibility because, like, even if they wanted to trade one of these two upcoming 2024 picks, that's still an option as well if they want to try to see what else is out there. So I want you to continue with your slides. And the reason why I think I'm a little bit more open to this idea of Murray returning as you go through your presentation here.
Yeah, so kind of one of the things that anyone should do as they're starting to prepare for like getting in the mindset of what a team might do during a trade deadline or an offseason or anything like that. The very first thing you want to ask is this team going to be a buyer or a seller? And the Spurs are at a really interesting part in their curve where they have been sellers for a while. And they do have a couple of players that they can still be sellers on. You know, Doug McDermott and Devontae Graham, I think are the two that come to mind. But outside of that, I think at this point, they've probably moved on from like getting a whole bunch of assets in trades, and they've now turned to where can we get things at the margin, take on a bad contract for an asset, you know, get a young player in a second draft situation where he didn't work out on his first team. Or if a young player who we think fits with our core becomes available, we have all these draft picks that we can push in now. So I think in a very interesting way, the Spurs are starting to become buyers more than they have been in a long time. Like the timeline is kind of starting to like go up from the down, where they kind of hit rock bottom and now it's going up. But the big question is, are they going to start aggressively pursuing that now or during the offseason? And, you know, Pop did tip his hat a little bit when he said, you know, I think we're probably not going to make a big splashy move unless there's something that really fits our now and our long term. Of course, you know, I think he lets Brian Wright in the front office kind of do their thing, but I would expect that he's in conversations with him. And if that's what he's hearing, that's what he's sharing along. But I do think an interesting thing is this team is starting to become a buyer more than a seller, which they have been recently. So now we're looking at what position do they need to improve on? And in the slide, I broke it up into three different positions and two different roles. So starting guard, starting wing, starting big, and then backup guard, backup wing, and backup big. And I think, to me, there's only two solid lock it in, we're good. And that's the one of the starting wings position being Devin Vassell and the starting big being Vic. So outside of that, there's a lot of question marks. And that's not me saying they're going to move on from any of these other players. I think, you know, Sochan, they've already, the point guard experiment failed or whatever, but like, where exactly does he fall within that hierarchy? You know, Trey Jones, I think the next time this team makes a playoff push is going to be the backup point guard, and they're going to have someone else there. So, you know, it's not to say that those are the only two players that I think are worthwhile on this roster, but in terms of like, this is the spot where I think they will be in their next deep run, those are the only two, and that makes it hard. I think, you know, one thing I mentioned with DeJounte Murray that I think is a really interesting idea to me is 48 minutes of solid pick and roll play, where like you feel like Trey Jones can do that really well. And there are some other guys on the roster who can do that in spots. And obviously Jeremy Sochan was learning that skill or whatnot, but like just have someone come in and actually be able to run pick and roll. Trey Jones comes in, he can do it. You know, the next one comes in. A name that I've kind of heard bandied about a little bit, and I know it will not excite fans, and I think there have even been times where fans have used this player as like a mediocre trade target name, but I actually think would make the offense way more watchable, is Trey's brother, Tyus. He is a free agent this offseason, and getting him now means that you have his bird rights. And of course, like that's not the Bucks getting Dame in the offseason, but it does get you 48 minutes of consistent point guard play, which I think does mean something for Vic and his development. So to me, the pick and roll part is a big one. And then the big wing, like a starting wing who you can throw on a Giannis. And of course, again, Giannis is one of the best players in the league, but you know, he could get whatever he wanted against the Spurs on Thursday night, you know, especially because Vic is focused on their five man and protecting the rim. And now all of a sudden they're having to go to this zone where they're doing the build a wall strategy. And now he's kicking out to 3-point shooters who are getting open shots. So I think a big wing who can like early Spurs era Rudy Gay would be great on this team right now, for instance. But to me, those are the two, is like, whether it's a starter or a bench, a guy who can run the pick and roll so that you have 48 minutes of it with this player and Trey Jones. And then like a starting big four who you can throw on the biggest wings. And then you can have Sochan attack the best 1-3 on their team as a defender. So to me, that's what it is. I haven't actually started looking at what those players would be. I thought this would be a really early discussion for us because we are a month away, but that's kind of where I got. Was there anything that you started thinking of as you looked at this in terms of like a player type or a position that the Spurs have a need at right now?
We both have the same holes in the lineup in terms of like, what are the future positions that they definitely need? So yeah, no, what I did was I just wrote down, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I did the starting lineup. Then I did the bench. And for the starters, you know, for the two, I think, like you said, Vassell's locked in there. I think that's his position. You know, they don't really need to upgrade there. Wemby, of course, at the five or the four, you know, if they, he could play either. Right now, I think just having a best right there at the five. And then for now, I didn't think it was an immediate need to move Sochan down, you know, move him around, whether it's still in the starting lineup or even off the bench. So I think even for next season going into, my mindset was more so like the next 1 to 2 or 3 years, like just kind of, this season's pretty much a wash. Obviously we know they've only have 5 wins. So, you know, you're not really worried about winning this season. It's more so for starting beginning in next season. So when you're targeting players, that's what you're looking for next season. And so again, right now I'm putting Sochan there at the four. So then, like you said, starting point guard is the one position, first of all. And then second is that starting small, what I would say small forward. And you know, a player that fills there, fits there, should I say. So you have the backup point guard, you know, locked up, like you said, Trey Jones. You have, for now, I'm just putting Brandon there as a backup two. If with Keldon on the team still, that, you know, your backup three, and then Zach Collins when he gets healthy still, your backup five. So there is a position there, whether it's starting or off the bench, as another four, like you're saying, a power forward player. So I looked at it more so. I went through all 30 teams just real quick glance at their salaries, and I was trying to look for players that, you know, they're set. It wouldn't take a lot for the Spurs to acquire this player via trade at the deadline. And also, is this player either on a long-term contract that's manageable, or is it a player who's in going into free agency? And but then, you know, you would basically want that commitment. You know, just you're very positive or very how do you say it? Like very confident that you're going to re-sign this player in the summer. Okay. So I actually, before even looking at the Murray rumor, I actually had already wrote down Murray for Keldon just because the Hawks were the first team that I, you know, clicked their page on my salary sheets. And so DeJounte Murray was obviously one of the, because again, he you have him under contract for 4 years after next year. So again, and it's a manageable salary within $30 million each season. So again, he's not, like you said, he's not going to, you know, they're not going to go all the way to contender status, but they're going to, with the last team with DeJounte was a play-in team. Not only that, you have a better Vassell, you have Sochan, you have Wembanyama. So there's just a higher ceiling for that level of team with Murray. And then you have that steady, productive point guard who, you know what he's going to bring. He's familiar with the Spurs' system. So that he was one of the players in terms of that starting point guard role that again, it's not a huge salary that you're giving up. It's not a lot of assets that you're giving up. So he would run the team for like the next 4 years, and that would be a good building block with Wemby. The other player I had, not really a marquee name. It's Dorian Finney-Smith of the Nets, more so just like as a stopgap for these next 2 years, because he's under contract let's see, next year he's under contract this year. Next year he's under contract, and then he has a player option in 25-26. Again, his salary is about $13.9 million this year. Next year it's about 15.4 or 14.9. So again, more so just to be, like I said, just a good established 3 and D wing. Again, he's not going to help out on the creativity, but he's going to be one of those lockdown defenders for you. We saw how good he was in Dallas. Obviously, he hasn't had the same type of seasons with Brooklyn. He is 30 years old, so that would mean that, again, you're getting for like those 2 years. Again, the Spurs aren't expected to go to be championship contenders by that time, but still, he's a more productive player. He has a defined role, so that's one of the moves I looked at in terms of starting wing. And then I also wrote down, like you said, Tyus Jones and also Monty Morris, who's with the Pistons. Basically, they're in the same situation where Jones has a larger contract of $14 million. Morris is at $9 million, but they're both going to be unrestricted free agents. And this is more so that slow rebuild move where you just want that consistent veteran in there who's gonna manage the game clock, just not turn over the ball, be a good pick-and-roll partner with Wemby, kind of get the players in their positions. And so, again, if you acquire Tyus or Monty, again, you have a good inclination that you're going to be able to re-sign them in the offseason, because obviously you wouldn't trade for them just for a few months on a 5-win team. You know, there's no point to that. So that's kind of my thoughts, where I didn't really see just early on, you know, I, again, because they're not expected to go to contender status within like the next year two or three with Wemby, I wouldn't go dramatically in terms of really being aggressive and losing some future assets or giving up really good players to try to go get a player who's established as established right now. So again, I wouldn't make a huge splash on the Spurs, but I would, you know, look at some deals like we've talked about here and say, hey, if this is going to benefit the team for the next 2 to 4 years, you know, why not do that right now? And then regarding what you said about sellers and buyers, again, I just agree with you right there with, I agree with you, should I say, McDermott. Obviously, I think that they're just looking to see, you know, can they get some second round picks from before he hits free agency? Jetty Osmond's interesting because I could see them, because he is on the last year of his deal, I could see them trying to move him just in case, they can get some draft capital. But he's also the type of player where I feel like they actually like him. He's only, how did I write his age? He's only 28 years old. So if they can lock him up, you know, 2 to 4 years on an extension this offseason or on a new contract, I feel like he's really been a part of the team and they really like him just to be there as a good veteran player with this young group. So again, I could see him returning. And then Devontae, I didn't write down just because I don't think he has a lot of value. I don't think teams would trade for him at this point out there. So that's kind of where my thoughts are with the situation that you mentioned.
Yeah, I think... one of the things is we're talking about this that I feel like is important, and it's a little bit understated. You know, one of the things that I've been looking at this season as is, you know, unless Wemby has like an injury plagued year, this is going to be his worst season until he's post prime, you know, like looking at his aging curve, looking at his physical development and looking at just him learning the NBA game. You know, he's going to continue getting closer to prime, and then he's going to be in prime for however long his body allows, and then he's going to start to decline. So this is his worst year. Like, he's obviously still very good, but I think that it should be a priority that you want to find that pick and roll
ball handler
to pair with him. And a big example I can think of is Steve Jones Jr. of the Dunker Spot talked about like building that pick and roll chemistry. And a great example I can think of is D'Angelo Russell is a good pick and roll ball handler. And when Rudy Gobert came over, you know, Rudy really struggled in that first half of that season until they traded for Mike Conley, who he had that chemistry with. Mm-hmm. He had built that chemistry with. And I think whoever you bring in, it's going to take a while for Vic to build that chemistry. But once you have it, it's going to be so important. I mean, we hear the stories of Tony Parker and Tim Duncan, where it's just like a simple eye movement and they know, oh, Tim's going to cut to the basket, right? Like these are only things you can build with time. And I think they need to build these reps with that player who's going to be his pick and roll running mate for some time to come. And whether that means giving Trey Jones more of the starting minutes like they have recently and it's been successful, or whether that means like, hey, keeping an eye out of if there is anyone on the trade market that they can land, like a DeJounte. So yeah, that's where I'm at too. And it's really, you know, it's hard because you don't, if you're the Spurs, want to give up too many assets. They have so many assets that they could make a big splash if it became available to them. And I think one thing that can't be underrated is even with how their season has gone, there have still been situations where big name players have mentioned, oh, you know, I want to go to a winning situation. I want to go to this place, and this place. But I respect Pop, and I wouldn't mind playing with Wemby. You know, like we've heard that several times already. I know that came out with the Dame stuff, but I think that also came out with the Zach LaVine stuff as well. And so regardless of what the record is right now, like NBA players understand, you know, they all started in the same place and Wimby's only going to get better and better. And I think there are some players who see the appeal of growing with a player like that. So I think, you know, it's hard because if you wait too long, then you miss your chance, but you don't want to give up assets and then miss the ability to make that big swing. Because I actually think with Wimby here, there are big name players who would be willing to be a part of a rebuild like this. So that's been very tough for me is the asset management. You know, I think that's the biggest question that they have to deal with right now. They got so many assets that it's hard to walk the line, but they don't have like Thunder level assets where they can kind of just throw a couple around in a trade. So yeah, it's tough. I honestly would expect them to do exploratory talks like they have done with DeJounte, but unless the price is something that they feel super great about, then they would be pretty quiet until the offseason. But, you know, I think kind of like what you're talking about, the different types of players, they talked about in the Hollinger and Duncan. John Hollinger mentioned, you know, Tyus Jones is a free agent this summer, and so bringing him in means you have his bird rights. So there's those kinds of situations there. To me, I would imagine it's going to be probably a pretty quiet trade deadline, except for maybe some fringe moves. But I think if they can bring in that player who could fill in the other pick and roll minutes next to Trey Jones on the like lineup sheet, that could provide a lot of value going forward.
Okay. We also got to mention too, that they do have the, you know, potentially the first pick in the draft and also the, you know, potentially the eighth pick in the draft. But again, you know, even like the guy we were talking about with Ben about a month ago, Isaiah Collier, I looked at ESPN's latest draft mock and he's like falling down to eighth. So again, there's like not, we've heard all, everybody's just been talking about how this isn't like a great draft. So I don't know if you really want to, you know, you want to put too much into that you're going to find either that starting point guard or that starting wing out there. So again, trade deadline is still about a month away, but it was just really interesting that, you know, it was a really fun topic to talk about. Just Colin, you know, Colin prepped the notes there. And I really, you know, actually switched it. We were supposed to talk about the games first. And then I was like, no, this is really fun. And then especially with the DeJounte rumor that just came out. So again, I'm with you, Colin, where I think that they will just kind of watch the deals that are out there. Again, they'll try to get some value for some of those veteran players. But, and if there's like some ability to take on some bad salary for draft picks, they'll do that. But again, I wouldn't think that, I don't think they would be super aggressive at shopping, going after a player like DeJounte, unless like the deal they really feel is right. And it's not, and they're not giving up too much San Antonio.
Yeah.
That'll be too much. Go ahead.
The other thing about drafting a point guard, you know, whether it's Collier or Topic or whoever it is, you know, even if they draft the best point guard in the class and this player turns out to be an all-star in their career, you know, point guards are, as a rookie, if you're starting a rookie point guard, you are going to lose games. Like, mm-hmm. if you want to look at a MVP caliber prospect who came in, had a rough couple years, Kevin Durant, his first year, the Supersonics were bad. The second year, he took a big leap forward, but their starting point guard was Russell Westbrook, who became an MVP, but he was a rookie starting point guard, and they started 2 of 18. So I think that's also another thing that I want to convey to fans is like, I understand and I do like the idea of getting a rookie point guard who will eventually grow with the team. But if you do that, you are almost certainly signing up for another year of bad, which with Cooper Flagg in the 2025 draft, I don't know if that's the worst thing in the world, but I also know that that's not what fans want to hear right now. So it's just one of those things where like drafting a point guard sounds like a great idea, but just a heads up, you are signing up for another year of losing probably if you do that.
Yeah, no, for sure. So we'll see it's about a month away. We'll definitely revisit this before the trade deadline gets here. And now that, you know, every week on the Spurscast, I need to make sure I'm checking all the rumors pages and things like that, see what's going on. If the Spurs are in any type of trade rumors. All right, so let's go ahead and finish with the last few topics here at this episode. Let's just do a quick recap of the games. So there's only been two since I last recorded an episode last week. They've actually had a good chunk of days off lately. So first it was Giannis versus Wemby round one. This took place last Thursday in San Antonio. It was a close game throughout. The Bucks were on the second night of a back-to-back. The Spurs barely lost this game by 4 points. Giannis had 44 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists. And then Wemby counters him on a minutes restriction with 27 points, 9 rebounds, 5 blocks. Of course, we know one of his epic blocks was that one on Giannis trying to dunk the ball. ball. I mean, you don't see that happen to Giannis every day, is at a player actually blocking him. And so Wemby did that. Obviously, we know the Spurs ended up losing. And then the Spurs had another good game on Sunday afternoon in Cleveland. So they're up early by 14 points. Then the Cavs come back and have a 16-point lead. And now, you know, pretty much we think that it's over. Well, no, the Spurs battled back. They get the game down to crunch time. And they barely lose by 2 points. And they had a chance there when Wemby gets double-teamed down low in the last few seconds of the game. He passes it to Sohan, who's cutting. Sohan, you know, ends up throwing that ball out of bounds to Keldon Johnson. And of course, that was the Spurs' best chance to win the game there on that possession. And so again, they just barely lost by two. Consider they were down by 16. Wemby again has another great night on offense and defense with 24 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks. Just 10 blocks in two games is insane. The fact that we have to just read that, like when I did the stats, I forgot what the number was, but it said like, I don't know what the number was. It was like 91, and then two games go by, and then I type 101. I was like, oh my, he just got 10 blocks in two games. It just boggles your mind that he's the only player. The other players, like you'll see like Dominic Barlow, like 1-3, like, you know, it's just like, and yeah, Wemby does 10 in two game span. Just talking about Wemby, what he's been doing lately, he's really picked it up offensively. 20 points in five straight games, which is 20 or more points in five straight games, which is the first time he's done that this in his rookie career. And then also 101 blocks in just 31 games. And we got to remember, this guy in the last like 5 or 6 games, he's been on a minutes restriction. He's not allowed to play in back-to-back. So just incredible numbers that he's putting up right now, especially defensively. And he's still on that minutes restriction. They haven't quite lifted it yet. Like we saw against the Bucks, if the game's right on the line, they might give him that 26-minute push. But aside from that, what are your thoughts, Colin, on these last two games, and specifically Wemby, what the numbers that he's showing right now or providing?
Yeah. One thing that I really have liked recently has been the aggression that he has in this minutes limit. I feel like he's very mentally cognizant of, when I go out there, I have 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you can see, like, from the moment the ball tips, he is aggressive to get to his spot and get his shots. And he is like scoring well. And I think, you know, a big question that a lot of people have had is, hey, you know, Wemby came in, why are the Spurs worse than they were last season? And I think people are very much underrating the fact that he's coming in and he knows the level of hype around him. He knows what he can become, but he also is coming in with this level of, like, if you ever hear him talk, like, I want to learn from these guys. I want to be a part of the Spurs. Like, I want to be. And at the same time, these other players are trying to figure out how to play with Wemby too, while also still getting their own. And it's kind of this awkward, like, song and dance of, is it my turn? Is it your turn? What's going to, and just to see, it's almost like this minutes limit has forced him, when he's out there, to know, like, hey, you're only going to be out there for 25 minutes. So if you want yours, you got to get it now. And like, to see that has been really impressive. I think one really interesting thing for me is we're at 35 games in now. And this is, I think, when a lot of us would have expected his production to start to decline because of the length of seasons over in Europe. You know, he had a really good first 5 games, and then he was good for the next 30 or 25 or 20 or whatever. But the fact that he's really picked it up, even though this is normally the time in the year where a lot of rookies are like, hey, like, I'm not used to playing 82 games, and now we're hitting the 40 game mark and I'm not used to it. Like, the fact that the production is going up instead of down now is a really promising sign to me. And yeah, it's just, you know, I think it made this season exciting, even when they were losing, to every night have, like, I remember one of our early podcasts when you just had like the play-by-play and it was like, this is the like really amazing thing when we did this. And, you know, he was obviously still playing really well, but like these past two games and even before that, but especially those last two, I feel like we're really starting to get back to, oh my gosh, did you see what Wemby just did? Which is, you know, win or lose, I think that's kind of the best that any person who's watching, analyzing, or whatever the Spurs could hope for, is just that like level of excitement from him, because we know what the season is going to be. Yeah. But it's just been fun to see those moments come back where it's like, oh my gosh, did you just see what Wemby did? I had, you know, family members saying, oh my gosh, you know, I haven't watched the Spurs in however long, but like, I saw the highlights of that game. How did he do that? You know? And that's just, I'm glad that we're getting back to that, because that makes the season a whole lot more fun, regardless of what the record is.
Yeah, well, that was the Bucks game was the one, right, where he throws off the glass and dunks it himself. My God.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, and then just, what was it? Even like the other day against the Cavs, just, you know, I'm just going to run pick and roll with Trey Jones setting the screen. Trey Jones rolls under the rim, and he still finds Trey through traffic, and Trey finishes the layup. Just Yeah, and this is only year one again, and obviously, you know, man, it's just gonna get, he's only gonna get more dangerous. And then one of the things I like doing after the games is when I get the quotes from the visiting teams is I love to just, because every reporter asks the same question at this point. They're like, they'll ask the team that beat the Spurs, you know, obviously, you know, how did you beat the Spurs, blah blah blah. But then the second question is always, what did you think of Wemby? And then every player just has like just these, it's just really interesting to see the level of players. Like the other day, Donovan Mitchell saying he's going to be a defensive monster already. Like it's just, and these are some like, you know, high level players here, like, you know, all stars, all NBA level players that are just giving these answers. And I think that's something to keep in mind. What you mentioned earlier about the trades is that like are signing as free agents down the road is that some of these players, you know, they're going to keep in mind, they've only seen what rookie Wemby is. Imagine from year three, year four, you know, what he's going to be like if they want to come, you know, join him on Spurs. So again, that's one of the things I really like to seeing as well after the games is some of the quotes that from some of the other players in the league, their impressions on Wemby.
And the players know too, you know, I think of actually Donovan Mitchell is a great case for that. And the other guy I think of is Devin Booker, who their rookie years, their teams weren't seeing a lot of success, but every time other players would come in, they'd be like, no, this guy is special. Even like, oh, Devin Booker, you know, his true shooting is 40% or whatever. And people are like, well, I don't know if he can, but like other players would come in and they're like, no, this guy is it. And now look, you know, here we are 7-8 years later. And, you know, the players know when they're playing against the guy who has that it factor. And I think, you know, obviously he has accounting stats. The record isn't where people want it to be. But I think that the most telling thing of if he's on track or not is like a player like Giannis saying, like, we have never seen a guy like this before and he's going to take over the league someday. Like those, you know, these are the people who live that craft every day. They know like what they see when they see it. And so I think that's probably the most encouraging thing to like, yeah, he's still on track to where we thought he would be before the season started.
Yeah, for sure. Totally agree there. All right. So the last topic, let's not spend too much time on it because we don't know if it's going to be an actual consistent lineup. So Trey Jones has started the last two games for the Spurs against the Bucks and the Cavs. And mainly that happened against the Bucks because Branham was coming off an injury. Malachi Branham had been the starting point guard. So let's just look. And again, it's a two-game sample size, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on here. So in 63 possessions with Jones at the point, and again, Vassell at the two, Champagne at the three, Sohan at the four, Wemby at the five, the Spurs are a plus 10.9 points per 100 per cleaning the glass. When Branham was there in 90 possessions, it's that same lineup was a minus 14.7 points per 100. Again, very small sample sizes. Most of the Spurs' most used lineups have logged at least 180 possessions or more. So again, we're looking at a very tiny sample size here. Pop hasn't even confirmed that Trey's going to be the starting point guard going forward. Again, this has just happened because Malachi was coming back from injury. So we don't know quite yet if this will be the lineup going forward. And then one thing we noticed is just their competitiveness. I mean, they barely lost to the Bucks by 4 points. They barely lost to the Cavs by two. And just some very early numbers. Again, just two games. Trey's averaging 18 points per game with five assists to two and a half turnovers. And again, one of the main reasons why they moved Keldon to the bench was that they wanted to see what Vassell and Wemby could do with Keldon coming off the bench. And at first, as I mentioned in last week's episode, Vassell was having a little bit of a struggle at first. But in these last two games, he's really taken off. He's averaging 28 points per game, 3.5 assists to zero turnovers. And then Wemby, of course, like we mentioned, 25.5 points per game and two assists to four turnovers. And he's also getting to the line 8.5 free throw attempts per game. Again, at two game sample size, we don't want to spend too much time on here. Just what have your initial thoughts on Trey Jones as a starting point in the event that he gets to keep this spot?
Yeah, I think the word I used on Twitter earlier today was the steady hand. You know, it reminds me a lot of when Derek White was here and there was almost like a calming effect where he kind of just like dictates the offense. He kind of, okay, guys, like, let's calm down. Let's get everything going, set into things. And I think the other thing that can't be overstated is just having a lineup where everyone is understanding what their role is and confident in their role. You know, I understand the Jeremy Sohan point guard experiment. I think it's fair to say that by the end of that, he wasn't comfortable or confident in his role. You know, Malachi Branham came in the league kind of be more like what Devin Vassell is, this like two guard, three level scorer. You know, I don't think came in with these point guard level skills as much as like a scoring wing. And so, you know, that's not to say that either of those players are bad or that either of those players can't become an offense setter as time goes on. But I do think that there is just something about, you have five players out there who are all comfortable in what their role is, know what they're out there to do, and feel comfortable playing with each other. And I think that's what happens when you slot Trey Jones at point guard. You know, I think that just makes the whole lineup make sense. And like I said, everyone feels comfortable in their role. And I think you can see it when the net ratings, the way they are, with how competitive they are. And yeah, I think it's one of those situations. I was rewatching all of the defensive possessions in that Cavs game. And, you know, the whole butterfly effect, just because one thing happened doesn't mean the whole game would happen that way. Mm-hmm. They lost by two, but at the end of the first, they inbounded the ball to Caris LeVert and he shot a three. Like, the Spurs just threw the ball to Caris LeVert.
Yes, I remember that.
Do I think if that didn't happen, oh, they would have won by one? Like, that's not how this works. But at the same time, like, those are the margins here. Like, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about they go through these five-minute stretches where they have terrible execution and they lose by 15. And now we're talking about little mistakes here or there, and they're losing by two. Like, this is a huge improvement. And I think part of that is just you have someone running the show who's confident in that role. And whether Sohan sometime becomes confident in that particular role, or Branham does, or they trade for another point guard who can be, or something like that. I think that just that level of comfort in that point guard role is something that starting lineup needs to look the way that it has with Trey Jones.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And then it'll be, if they keep Trey in the lineup, it'll be good, really good, just for, I think, for their team, you know, I guess morale, because this is their month where they can get a lot, you know, get a few more wins on the board. This could be one of their best months of the season by schedule, by the opponents that they're supposed to play, because they're already supposed to open up with Detroit on Wednesday, and then who is it? Charlotte, I think, on Friday. So I think just having, you know, having one of their best lineups and groups out there, you know, just to get some wins on the board by the end of the month would be nice for the team. All right, Colin. So thank you for joining me here on this episode of the Spurscast, and also for contributing some notes there, man. That trade topic was really fun here there at the beginning of the episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.